I was just thinking, you know how we always start the show with like no real opening? It just is us talking and then we get to the opening or something.
Do we do that because we want to?
We do that. I was thinking, wait, why don't we do it the other way? Then I realized, oh, because people have to kind of filter in. You know, even if they're ready, they're not like, they don't get to see the image for a while. I was going to try something different and start right on the start, but that would be terrible.
You changed your mind. You like I've for people never to feel like they've been mind. Part of the conversation and we're just continuing.
Yeah, so. We're just picking up where we left off.
So, I was thinking there's been times I thought it would be very entertaining for people to join us in for the backstage portion and just see how those conversations go, because of the before and after show, it's pretty funny stuff sometimes.
Well, we might have a way to show people the backstage and the before and after coming up, actually.
Hello, so. Scotland.
Hello, Chloe. All right. So welcome to the Backpack Show.
We bring you insights about business success from unusual places. And in between, we have a few little shenanigans.
And today, we have two guests. I was just thinking how funny it would be to make it sound like we'd never done a show before.
Like we never had guests before?
Never. Just like, I mean, we guests. Do every time. Yeah.
We do. We're talking with Jennifer Openshaw, founder of Girls with Impact, on this episode of The Backpack Show. I'm very excited about that. So it's the only live online entrepreneurship program made just for teenage girls. Jennifer is also incredibly accomplished, so we're going to talk with her about all the different things she has accomplished since she was first working as a chambermaid in a hotel at age 14. She has completely just demolished any expectations and
kind of come a little far from that, I guess.
Yeah, it's amazing. So she's a finance expert and a really inspirational figure to me. So I'm excited to talk with her. And you found our second guest.
Yeah, Jack Rosenthal sent me an email and I almost never respond to these kinds of emails, but it was well written, very personable, very kind. And he was like, hey, I'm this like investor guy. Happened to be a teenager, and I was like, teen investor. And then I thought, you know, he's only got a couple more years and he could be that. He's just gonna be 20 something, and then you know, you could be the kid for a few more years, and then it's over. You're just gonna be a freaking old man. So we've got Jack Rosenthal, teen investor.
Get 10 years if you're lucky. Use them well.
I see that my biological father is here, and also his wife, the woman who gave birth
your
to
mother?
Me. Diane Brogan. Yep. Good to see you both.
And Elizabeth.
Hello. And Elizabeth. Hola.
What were you investing in at 18?
I was running up a Sears charge card like I had no idea what they were about.
I mean, so. I went and saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off like 167 times. So
I think that's a worthy investment. Hi, Deanna. So I think we're going to get advice from both sides of the spectrum, right? We're going to get, you know, how to make teen girls into the CEOs that the world needs. And we're going to ask Jack which of the crypto coins I should be putting my money in.
That's a good idea.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show. And we're off.
I was just thinking we need Tim Kitzer to do our Backpack Show After Dark thing for in May when we start airing at 7 p.m. Eastern.
You are not wrong. You're not wrong. I think we have to make a new one anyway. I mean, don't you think we ought to put a few more guests in? We've had 9 or so months of guests since that last pile.
But you like the one you did.
It's going to be hard to say. Well, do you mean I like the intro that I did?
I do. I do mean that.
Man, that's catchy.
You're so funny. Don't you love it? There's zero guests in that, by the way. You're like, we need more guests. So we've had 9 months of guests. You put the thing together. There's none.
No,
it looks like it's just the two of us doing nothing at all.
You know how much work it is to make that graphic that Dan made?
Yes.
He's a masochist, but he's so good at his job. Oh, all right. Dear. Listen, we need one more Jennifer Openshaw. I think
there's only the one.
There's a balance missing here.
It's like the Highlander.
Grab. Oh, there can be only one. That's good thinking. All right, let's grab her. Jennifer Openshaw, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good morning. It's great to be here. Hey, investing as a teen boy, you know, I was doing budget spreadsheets, believe it or not.
Wow.
Really? Budgeting as a teenager.
When I was in college, I was just into it. Like, I wanted to know where my money was going, and I loved having money, so...
I loved having my mom. Yeah. I started an egg cream stand because I felt like lemonade stands are so played out. Like I did an egg cream stand.
But hey, Gary, I can make a bed like the Holiday Inn way, like nobody else can. I mean, let me tell you, at 14, as a maid in a motel,
I was a chambermaid for 2 weeks while one of my friends was out of town, and I did such a poor job making the beds. They did not ask me to stay when my friend came back, but that's fine. I went to work at a bakery, and I stayed there, worked every summer until I was like 24 or 25 when I was done with graduate school. So by the end of it, I had my master's in bakery administration.
Wow. So Jennifer, how did that prep you for that? Because I mean, I didn't start work as early as you, but as soon as I was allowed to work, I mean, I always liked working. I had a pretty good work ethic because my parents are ridiculously hard workers. But I don't think it really set me up for a mindset where I saw beyond, you know, the paycheck showing up. So it took me many years to find the kind of drive it took for me to eventually be me. How did you find it so early?
You know, I think, Chris, part of it was because my mom was single from when I was 5 on, and I raised my brothers from when I was about 8 on. And, you know, I saw that, you know, I saw the times when like she could make the pay the bills. Right. And at some point when I was 12 years old, riding home on my navy blue Schwinn bike in the middle of the street, I sort of had this aha that I, you know, wanted my own financial independence. I figured it was going to be all up to me. And I also kind of had this, you know, visualization that I wanted to do something impacting people on a large scale. And, you know, just sort of climbed out. And part of it was watching it, how people behave and how they got to where they are. And, you know, part of it was luck, I would say. And part of it was some good people along the way and some jobs that gave me some good breaks.
No one takes those choices, you know, starting to do those kinds of things at single digits. No one picks that because it seems like a fun thing. Yeah. And a lot of times people sink beneath the waves back then. What do you bring forward from that? And also I want to know, how do you help people? I know confidence is super important in your Girls with Impact program. And confidence, I think, is like one of the second biggest tenets of the thing. How do you bring forward what it took for you to find your footing with your upbringing and what it contributed to who you became?
I think grit really plays into it. I think it's more important than ever today. It's like, you got to stay with it. You know, some people say that half of it is showing up. It is showing up, but it's consistently. It's so easy to give up. And it's just persistence. I mean, I remember when I started my first company in Silicon Valley, when the internet was really taking off, and my significant other at the time said, you know, well, God, Charles Schwab could do that. And I was like, they could, but they're not. And these big companies are really slow. And, you know, part of it is a little bit of chutzpah too, you know, risk taking. I think a lot of people are afraid of taking risks, right? I mean, I remember my third book, I think I talked a lot about coming outside your comfort zone. And most people like to stay in that comfort zone. And if you don't, you're never going to move forward. You're never going to move forward. So it's a really good reminder when you're stuck. It's like, what do you have to gain by moving forward or by staying where you are, right? So
you had aspirations, and what you were interested in, it sounds like, is independence, self-sufficiency. But how did you find this exact career path? Like, there's a lot of ways to be independent. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have been like, I want to get into this finance thing. Like, that was so far from my sphere of interest at that age. How did you come into that and grow so fabulously into being a financial expert?
Well, it's kind of a fun story. I was actually in business school while I was working full time in the financial industry. And I was looking at my buddies like next to me in the class, and literally they were taking their college loan money and investing it. Okay. And at the same time, I became the money expert for KCBS TV in LA, and women in the station would come up to me asking questions about their money. And so, you know, it was a combination of finding a huge opportunity to help women with their money because they were coming into it more like 30%, 40% of women are the breadwinners, and they gotta manage it well, right? So I really, I think, partly wanted to help them kind of, you know, achieve the same level of success to some extent that I had. And look at the power of the internet and technology meant that, you know, it's open to everybody. It's like the barriers are just not the same anymore. And so when I saw what my classmates were doing and I did some research and saw that, you know, women were not going to places like Charles Schwab or Yahoo Finance back in those days, I sort of said, hey, well, what about something, a business that would help women both educate them and allow them to take action? So I started that company called Women's Financial Network, which I later sold. And I just really love doing things that are very purposeful, that harness technology so they're scalable, so that it's easy for people. And, you know, today in some ways it's actually gotten easier to do that. So that's, I don't know, I hope that answers your
much. Question. I mean, I used to have to call people on an actual landline phone that I shared with other people in my house. So talk about technology lacking.
Yeah, right.
Very hard.
Jennifer, you, from your earlier books, there's been such a turn in the road to where you are with Girls with Impact. It's to me, the your earlier books are like, you could be wealthy and here's some great ways you can learn. And like sort of, you know, you're sort of standard financial success books, which I'm not trying to demean the books by saying that, but they're very much like books that we read in that space. This turn in the road is like, you know, I need to make girls feel important. I feel like there was some kind of found religion moment in there, or finally, or maybe just a point where you said, I've got this mission now. What happened?
Well, this is a really interesting story because we talked earlier about like persistence, right? And grit. So there's some real grit in this. So the fact is that about 20 years ago, I did some research and I felt like, you know, when young people come out of high school, like, hello, the world is there and they're completely unprepared. And I started building something that really is the curriculum for Girls with Impact. But nobody would give me $15,000 to get it going. I had put $50,000 of my own money in. I had the number one charter school in East LA that had piloted it and wanted to roll it out. And I'm going to call him the president of Jeffries, who was on the board of the school, would not even give me $15,000. And I was like, this is ridiculous, you know? And I sort of thought, and I thought, you know, I'm a little exhausted. I'm going to put it on the shelf. And over the years, I would keep reading these pieces about, you know, the power of digital learning. And I knew I had something and nobody was quite doing this. And then, you know, literally like a good 15 years later, I was working for a big corporate. I was the CMO and partner of a research platform called When Women Thrive, where they look at like women in the talent pipeline. So research for companies, where are women coming and going and what are the big issues? And I was at the World Economic Forum in Davos, where we were launching our report with some really heady CEOs, okay? Like literally the CEO of Marriott, Cisco, eBay. But beyond that breakfast, the issue of women, like it went beyond, this is about 7 years ago. And I sort of had the aha and I said, you know what? And I had been waiting for a long time, like what's the next big it for me that leverages where I've been and who I am? And I said, you know what? I think really if we train the next generation better than anybody, because the schools can't do it, the world is changing and their skills are changing that they need, I think we have something here. And a lot of these corporates are saying they need to focus on women and diversity. And so I picked up the phone to a longtime Harvard University professor who'd known me back from my Silicon Valley days. And I said, Linda, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? And that was it. And but I said, this time I'm not starting it until somebody gives me some money. And I got somebody from who had done some of the creative, you know, your awesome logos, right? Like creative is so much. This is kind of interesting where I got somebody to do the creative for me and it made all the difference. And then I went to the a big foundation here, Fairfield County's Community Foundation. I'm going to give them a shout out. They're awesome. They gave me my first $25,000. And then I got a real estate company to give me the other $25,000. And I didn't pay myself for 4 years. And I was off and running. And the first time we really put together a first class of students and I brought them together. So live online class, they go from idea to a business plan and venture pitch in 10 weeks. And we would pre-COVID, we would bring them together in person and they would meet each other. And their parents would come. I'm like, this is off the charts. No one in the country is doing this. And Warren Buffett should come see this. It's ridiculous. And they're building businesses and ventures at 15, 16, 17 and getting a huge leg up for college and career.
Jack backstage is like, yes, you're speaking my language. Start young. There's no time to waste.
It's, you know, it's like these, this dad one time, and it's so true. It's like, this is business conditioning. Like, you know, frankly, everybody needs it when you're this young, and particularly like it's the gig economy out there. Who doesn't know somebody who's right, a gig employee or worker? You got to know how to operate. It's a whole different ballgame now.
So support,
people really liking this.
It definitely seems like, you know, so you had a lot of work to get support for the venture in the beginning, but since then companies have come forward to partner with you. So what are some of the companies that you're partnering with, and what kinds of things are they doing to support the work?
I think, you know, couple really interesting ones. Well, first off, Bic, the maker of pens, is a partner. We're actually doing a creative writing essay right now. So with Bic, I'm sure it's on our site under programs at girlswithimpact.org. But they're also supporting us putting girls school through. But I think Johnson & Johnson is a really interesting one. You know, look at, they are the makers of one of the vaccines, right? And when COVID hit, they said, you know, we want to like both support our employees, but we also want to support Latinos in that case. Let's start with our Latinos. And so what they did is a little different, is they brought their employees into our program, and they paid outright for their employees' children to go through our Girls with Impact Business Academy. And it was ridiculous. Like literally the president of Janssen Pharmaceuticals, the maker of the vaccine, he and his daughter, he's like, I'm looking at my daughter, Alejandra, go through the program. And it takes me back to my own MBA days, right? So that's been really cool, because not only did they bring it to their Latino employees to help bring more Latinas into the C-suite, they then brought it to their African-American employees, and now they're bringing it to the community. It's really cool. You know, U.S. Bank, they're one of the nation's top, and interestingly, they're actually one of the nation's most well-run banks. When the whole banking crisis happened, they were like steady Eddie, unlike a lot of other ones, because it's so well-run. But they said, you know, let's focus on New York girls, and we want to also engage our employees to mentor these girls. And so they gave us some funds, and we put low and moderate income girls through the program. Their employees then mentored them once they had their business ideas. And a really cool one is like this girl, Amira, she's 13 years old, learned to sew when she was young, you know, kind of had some interest in like some financial literacy, had been in some money classes. And she goes through our program, and now she's got structure in a business. And so she created Melanin Magic, where she's creating hoodies and stuff with part of the portions going to Black Lives Matter. Like, so cool. And when she goes to apply for college, if she goes to college or her first job, they're going to be like, you are leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else, right? Like, that's the beauty of it. So that's been really cool. And hopefully U.S. Bank is going to, we're going to do L.A. together with them. But we've served girls across the country, and actually in 11 countries.
People love what you're doing. Elizabeth had a question. She said, it took a lot more to become confident, especially in a Latin culture. So breaking out of culture, do you talk about that too with the Girls with Impact girls?
Breaking out of culture, like, you know, being siloed in your culture. Is that what you mean by that? You know, what's so interesting is that CNN did a piece earlier about breaking the racial and geographic lines. And what's so cool is that Latinas and African-Americans and Asians and all, they're all together. And it's so cool. And what they've said is that these girls learn about each other's cultures through their ventures. So like the Melanin Magic, right? And her just talking in her live class, because they're in a live weekly class with an MBA instructor, essentially. They're learning about the white culture, the Black culture, the challenges that they've faced. It's really, really cool. So that's super important. And, you know, this generation, like, they're a very different generation. I mean, first off, like, if their first employer isn't focused on racial justice and diversity and, like, walking the walk, not just talking the talk, they will not take a job there. They will not. And they are savvy. Yeah.
So I want to bring up something. You have a big offer heading into summer, and I made a little graphic that in no way is correctly centered. So I'm just gonna smoosh it right over everybody's face.
Perfect.
So there you go. So there is, I like the Dunkin' Donuts colors too. Powerful extracurricular program. This is a big old deal. This thing is $2,000 worth of value for just $395.
If you use the code Brogan.
Brogan. Yeah, so here's the thing. So this program, we designed it with folks from Harvard Business School. Literally, it's a mini MBA. They go from idea to learning all the real stuff in business, like what's a customer persona? I'm going to do a SWOT on my competitors. They do a break even in a P&L. Like, it's ridiculous, right? And then they close out by having a real pitch presentation, which is why it's so awesome. And during the summer, normally it's 10 weeks. So 1 hour a week of a live class with their same classmates and their same instructor, with about a good hour a week of activities against their business plan or whatever that week's topic is. During the summer, we kind of make it more intensive. So it's two classes a week. Each class is 1 hour. And then you've got the associated activities with it. So that program is during the summer. You can choose the, you know, am I going to go Monday and Wednesday or Tuesday and Thursday? It starts, we're taking registrations now, huge break, because there is not anything like this in the country where you'd pay, like, to go to MIT summer program for something kind of like this, you'd pay $8,000. And it's really cool. Girls who are putting it as their number one extracurricular on their college applications are, some of them are getting full ride offers to college. Literally, we've had a girl get two full ride offers to Babson and Howard, $200,000, because the program sets them apart, you know?
So I went to Bentley. We had nothing like this. I mean, in any program that I would have been part of, I would have been competing with, boys, like, for the, you know, attention to the instructor. They took up all the air in the room, basically. So I realized that was a different time. It's not all that different, right? So I was very excited to come across the Girls with Impact program, and I would love to see a lot of people take advantage of this offer.
Yeah, me too. The confidence thing is such an interesting one, because I, by the way, I'm kind of I've always been fairly, you know, I don't know, not always confident, but still will go after something. But now I really understand the confidence, and the male instructors in some of the top private schools said the same thing. They said, what happens is in schools, teachers will call on the students, but the boys raise their hands first. And so the teachers will call on the boys first, and it has a domino effect. And that's just one example. And we hear it all the time with these young women, including stress and depression, by the way. So the neat thing is that because it's in a girl environment and they're learning some really challenging things, but because they're doing it and overcoming it, their confidence keeps growing, right? I did a SWOT. Oh my God, I did a business presentation. Oh my God, that's like heady stuff. Their parents will be like, oh my God, you know, Janine, I had no idea what you signed up for. And I just saw you do like the kind of business presentation I do in the real world. Like, that's cool. So we want all girls. We now want to put like 1 million girls through this. That's
so, go get this. This is an amazing program.
Yeah. So we want you in. We'll never say no. If somebody's really struggling financially, we'll put them in free. And they can do it while they're doing anything else during the summer, pretty much too.
Excellent. Jennifer Openshaw, stick around with us if you can. We're going to put you backstage. We have another guest. Thank you so much for being part of this today and for bringing the words to us. Excited about Girls
Don't
with
leave.
Impact. Don't leave.
Seriously, you. I would have loved this. I would have loved this. Go and get
program
it.
Looks
grand. I went for my MBA when I was still really young, and it was just like all middle-aged white guys and me. So,
it's a biggie.
Yeah. Go get it.
Hey, want to make a show just like this one? You sure can if you want. StreamYard, cbrogan.me/StreamYard. You can make a show like this lickety-split and easy. cbrogan.me/StreamYard.
Bring your own financial expert.
Hooray. Hey, want a .online domain? They're $1 for an entire year. cbrogan.me/online.
If you use the code.
Chris, all caps. So you can use code Brogan at Girls with Impact. You can swing over to here. Use code Chris. You got my whole name saving you money all over the internet. Like some kind of trollop. All right. Hey, do you want a podcast? You can have a podcast. If you want to host it, though, where are you going to put it? Oh, that's right. Castos. castos.com
for your audio podcast.
Sure. As opposed to our video podcast. Yes. So this is going to be great. Okay, Castos. Hey, reminder, we're moving to 7 p.m. Eastern time starting May 1st. Backpack Show goes after dark for months and months and months and months and months, or until I can't stand it anymore. So Backpack Show after dark, 7 p.m. Eastern starting May 1st or whatever. The first week of May.
May 3rd would be the first show because that's the Monday.
Yeah, suddenly. Yes, Jennifer, unless you have somewhere you got to be, we do a little panel at the very end. I think we forgot to tell you about that because we had one fewer guest in our lobby. All right.
Looking at comments.
Do you know about this Girls with Wendy Stewart Grossman? Maybe.
It's a
Facebook.
And Elizabeth said to wait till her 30s MBA to get those kinds of skills. I got them in business school. I skipped a year of high school and went to college early. So I was 17, but it was still very male dominated. I'd say going to business school.
Indeed. Sure is. And speaking of male dominated, we're going to get teenage dominated by our man, Jack Rosenthal. He's going to teach us all about investment.
No one's
He's going to dominate our brains with our investing. Nobody. So I gotta hit the button. Jack.
I like that intro a lot. That was
right. I thought that and some good hard music would really get us rolling. You know, so the first thing to have to get out of the way is that sense that people will be like, well, this is just a gimmick. How far back were you the guy investing? Because I would spend all of my allowance and then borrow my brother's allowance.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's start off with a couple of things. First off, just a couple of notes from the previous interview I just heard. So first of all, I go to Babson. So funny you mentioned that. And in addition, it's funny that you had both of us on at the same time because a lot of the talk was educating young people, and there's not a lot of education in young people in schools and really in college about money and finance and investing. And that's a little bit about what I'm here to do. So just two kind of relations between the last podcast. Now, as far as if I'm legitimate or not, well, I can give a little bit of my story and hopefully the viewers can decide for themselves. So as far as when I got started, my grandfather set me up with my first investment portfolio when I was 8 years old. And ever since then, I've been trading the stock market. What was really more interesting is when I was 14 years old, I created this thing called the Young Investors Club. And basically that was a way, Young Investors Club LLC. And that was basically a way for me to invest alongside other teenagers. The idea was we'd all put in $1,000 and we'd all invest collectively together in the stock market. We partnered, so in order to grow that club, and then it kind of also goes to the grit you mentioned or Jennifer mentioned. In order to grow that club, I basically didn't have enough friends that would be able to put in $1,000. So I wouldn't be able to grow it out of my own personal network. I would need to basically go to an organization and try and partner with them in order to try and grow the group, similar to what Jennifer did. So we found a parent organization which had thousands of members across the United States and up and down the East Coast. And we pitched them. And after 6 months of going through decision makers, one person, the lowest person up the chain, then higher, then higher, then higher, then higher. Finally, we got to the regional family board director who finally, after like a meeting with me once or twice over the phone, approved to send out blast emails to all their members promoting the club for the first time. And then after that year, we had 20 members and 20,000 in assets in the club. And then by the time junior year, I'd grown up to 40, close to 40 members, 40,000 in assets. And then by the time my junior year came around, I decided I wanted to make it the largest teen investing club in the country. And by the end of that year, we started with 40,000. We had over 110,000 in the pot by the end of that year with close to 100 members, making us the largest that I'm aware of teen investing club in the country. That was high school. And then out of that, at the end of that, I wrote this book, Teen Investing, which is basically like a gift that I gave out to all the members at the end of the club after running it, being like, all right, here's all the principles that we've learned about investing in the stock market. I want to just give it out to all you guys just so you can kind of have like a summary of, you know, how you should go about investing as a teenager. What are some principles and lessons I've learned investing as a teenager throughout my early years? And, you know, what are some things you guys can do early on? And then I basically made the book available on Amazon because I figured, wait a minute, this isn't just relevant for everyone in the club. It could be relevant for anyone who's interested in investing in the country or any teenager interested in investing. And now you can go get that book.
Not to undercut sales, but what are some of the things you told them? Like, what are like one or two things?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So in the book, I talk about a few things. First off, the most important thing when you're a teenager is how you get the money to invest in the first place. So many teenagers want to be investors, or they go on apps like Robinhood, but they're playing with too little funds. They need to have more money to invest in the first place. Like like you mentioned, you worked a summer job. It's not that difficult to collect some small amount of capital as a teenager, but trying to start with like $100 or $200 and try and invest that, I've often found isn't enough to get teenagers interested, because the interest or the return you're going to get on that couple $100 is so minuscule that like it's not going to get anyone excited. What I recommend in the book is you need to first start with your first $5,000, which I know is like, oh, Jack, how are you ever supposed to get $5,000? If you work at a summer and you work at a summer job with $10 to $15 an hour pay, which is minimum wage pay, which any teenager could find if they're willing to go out and look hard enough. You know, you work at a country club, you work at an ice cream shop, whatever the case is, and you work for
country clubs are great.
Yeah,
those people are rich.
Yeah, they tip very heavily, and you work for a few hours a week during the summer or during each week, and then do that all summer. You can easily have $3,000 or $4,000 at the end of the summer. Not to mention, you do that for two summers. Bam, you got $5,000. So that's the amount that I recommend any teenager start investing with. And then after that, it's really about, okay, what kind of investor do you want to become? Do you want to become an active investor and choose a handful of stocks, really watch the stocks and decide what you're going to trade in and out of? Or do you want to just go a passive strategy, put it all in the S&P 500, which has done 8 to 10% every year for the last 50 years and probably will for the next 50 years. Just leave your money in there, don't touch it, and have a nice pot of money you've saved up when you're 40 or 50. So
I feel like the don't touch it is where a lot of people fall down. So Cody says you should stream on Twitch and spread your message. Twitch has become a hotspot for investment talks.
All right, I'll definitely look into it.
Well, so that's going to lead me into another set of questions, is that there's a lot of people on Reddit all of a sudden who are investing for their first time because they heard of things like going after the GameStop stock and the AMC movie theater stock and all that sort of a thing, which is getting a lot of younger people suddenly having conversations with their parents out of left field. For not always the best of reasons, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a fun social movement in making a stock go up and down just by a mass of humans doing something, but it's not necessarily going to teach them anything. How do you try to capture that at all? Or have you thought much about that, Jack?
Yeah. So a few things. I mean, one, you have another example of that, Dogecoin, which literally stands for like dog coin, which started as a joke, but now has a $35 billion market cap. And it just shows you like that humor investing, or, you know, just the kind of
the ironic investing,
whatever you want to call it, has a huge impact on the markets. And there's so much just money out there chasing investments that it can actually build up a company that large out of nothing. I mean, what is Doge? It's technically worth nothing, but yet it's worth $35 billion. So yeah, my general thoughts would be a few things. First of all, I think the stock market has had a bull run for the last 10 years, ever since people my age has gotten involved in investing, and they have yet to see any kind of major loss. You could technically argue it happened during COVID, but it bounced back so quickly that no one even had time to realize it. So I think that teenagers are very used to just the quote, stocks always go up. I've heard that one a lot. And so I think teenagers think they could just throw their money in any stock and they'll just be fine. But I think within the next few years, they're going to be in for a rude surprise. So I think that's the first example there. And then as far as what happened with GameStop, I mean, yeah, really crazy that something like that could happen in the financial markets. I mean, there's not much to say there. Just it happened. Yeah, basically a Reddit forum was able to increase the price of a major U.S. company just by kind of getting on this kind of theory of the greater fool theory of like one person's going to buy a stock at 10 and then 15. And then everyone's like, oh, it's going to 15 already. I'm going to buy it at 15. And it goes to 20. And then it just keeps going up and up and up. And also, funny enough, there was a I think there was a kid involved in my class. I went to a private school, and I think his dad was like on the other side of the GameStop bet, trying to bet the other way, and he got short squeezed. So
I was going
to
say he was probably shorting it, and he got beat for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, he got hurt.
A lot of rough times in there. Jack, one thought I had while I was thinking of, while you were responding to this all, was that you are – this is kind of a business where you kind of age out of it. I mean, you'll be 20 someday, maybe 22, and you won't. It'll be kind of weird running a teen business, or will it? Like, are you setting yourself up for this, or do you have a transition plan?
So we already have the transition plan. So that kind of gets into why I wrote the book. So the book was kind of like my leaving present for all the members. So that was after my senior year of high school. I wrote the book, basically give out to all the members, say, here's the principles of everything we've learned. Here's everything I've learned investing in the stock market over the last 4 or 5 years. And I want to basically put it all in a book and give it out to all the members. And then I basically had a younger member of the club who'd always been really active, who at the end of that year, I asked to take over the club. And he was very happy to accept. And yeah, now the club is no longer run by me. It's something that was started by me, but it is now run by a kid named Warren, who was a really active and helpful member.
So if somebody gave you a bag of money right now, where would you put it?
I'd probably try and find a good cryptocurrency to put it in, just because I would have like the mental concept in my head that the money wasn't actually mine. It was like a gift. So I'd be like, well, might as well put it in something really risky and see what would happen. Probably
like found money.
Yeah. Like found money. Exactly. It doesn't like mean as much to me, but probably Ethereum, because I actually think that that's a relatively good one.
So next week we'll have a cryptocurrency launched for the Backpack Show that is Rally, which runs on the Ethereum trade. So take a look. I'll tell you how to get it next week. Not that you can ever say anything good or bad or ugly about crypto. It's been such a fascinating ride for people, and Dogecoin being one example. Yeah. One of the things that's kind of weird about Dogecoin is it's printing coin way faster than any of the other like more, you know, real coins, let's say, for lack of a better term. So you're kind of investing into something that's printing money, which means ostensibly the value is going to go down. I wanted to go back. You said something about the last 8 to 10 years just being such a super long bull run. Ray Dalio said something like that in the early part of his book Principles, I imagine you read, where he was doing a lot of investing and thought he was a wizard, and then he realized it was just that he had done all his investing in a bull market. And when it finally turned bear, he got beat in the face. Do you worry about that yourself? Do you worry that, you know, a lot of the things that you consider to be good, sound advice are built on the back of this long bear market you've been in?
Yes. Yeah, so, okay. First of all, I can tell you what I do for my own investments. So my own investments, I mean, I guess one, you could say I'm very diversified. I have personally a big pot of money in the S&P 500, some money in other specific stocks I really like too, but a lot of my money is in the S&P 500. That's just the top 500 companies in the U.S., very stable, very strong. And I'd say a few things there. One of the principles I teach is you just hold on for the long run. One of the greatest advantages we have as teenagers is I don't have to sell tomorrow, next year, next 5 years. I can just ride out the whole thing for as long as I need to. And I think overall, you know, the American economy and the top 500 U.S. companies are going to be a good bet over the next 20 or 30 years, just long term. So that's kind of how I think about that. That's kind of how I recommend that in the book. And then some of the other pieces of advice I make for teenagers are you want to find companies that are going to be around for the long run. Like, for example, the one example I always give is a classic A-chip stock, but I think it's a really strong company, is Amazon. Amazon controls 40 or 50 cents out of every dollar spent in the U.S. on e-commerce. That is just such a huge industry dominating company that's just not going anywhere anytime soon. And especially as the economy shifts more and more to an online economy, Amazon's just in a position to just keep biting up huge chunks of that. And you already see now with fashion, they already launched giant fashion. So Amazon's really going to just continue to take over the e-commerce business in the United States and around the world. And I see that as a company that not only is not going anywhere for the next 20 years, but is only going to get bigger and bigger. So companies like that you really believe in the long run are going to be here and still thriving and still profiting. And then, of course, the second thing is you want to try and get them at a good price. So let's say, you know, Jeff Bezos steps down as CEO or something like that. The company Amazon doesn't actually lose any assets. It doesn't lose any market share. So that would be like a good price or a good entry point to enter it.
Dave wants to know what you think of XRP.
Okay, so as far as cryptocurrency, I know I mentioned something earlier. I don't know anything about cryptocurrency. I have investments in cryptocurrency. I know that I've seen them go up a lot. I have a friend who owns a lot of cryptocurrency. I don't know anything about it. I don't pretend to know anything about it. I know the stock market, but I don't know anything about crypto.
So that's where you put like your windfall extra money.
That's where I put some extra one money. I put $5,000 into Ethereum, and then that turned into like $6,500 3 weeks. So I was like, I like this cryptocurrency thing. but I don't pretend to know that anything like that. All I know is that I've heard from friends of mine that are experts in the whole crypto thing that Ethereum is one of their favorites. So it's kind of become my favorite as well.
A lot of people make it out to be sort of the more solid choice compared to crazy things like that go on in places like Bitcoin. It seems to just have sort of the more smoothed out looking lines in it. Dave, I have one last question. That was Dave Davies' name popped up. Jack, I have one more question, then we're going to ask to bring Jennifer back. People who invest are different than people who start and run companies. It's a whole different set of mindsets. Are you leaning towards launching your own ship into those waters and see what you do? Or are you going to keep backing the horses that are out there already?
Yeah, probably leaning towards starting a company at some point. Just because, like, yeah, because I think I can bring the most value to starting a company. I think that's where I can bring the most value creation. Cool. I have no idea what, but probably a company at some point.
I like your planning. All right, Jennifer, you're back in. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, really good stuff, Jack. Awesome. We come into money as a teenager and just so much more interesting to do something with it. And great advice on Amazon. You know, we actually teach these teens, like how Jeff started this company out of his garage and he's like one of the richest people in the world. And when these teens see that, they're like, oh my God, I had no idea, right? Which is why we got to teach them earlier.
I can't think what I would have invested in at 17, but I promise you it would have been nothing worth anything. It would have been like those earring shacks in the mall or something.
No.
Warren Buffett had that thing where he always said, just invest in products that you actually understand and whatever, which is
why. Right, earring shacks at the mall.
I think that's a really good, yeah, don't invest in stocks that you don't know. I kind of became a real estate junkie, actually, after I sold my first company and had a little bit of money. And you know, it was good. Like I tripled it. I got lucky, but you got to be super careful too, you know?
Comic books.
And with real estate, it's really funny because some people will argue, you know, stay residential no matter what, because, you know, commercial gets hit so hard when there's a financial problem, but there's so much bigger yield and so much bigger margin in commercial. So it's just, yeah. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I was looking through your past books, Jennifer. I knew that there was a lot that, you know, opinion you had, but it just must be also kind of fun to blend that idea of, now you're off teaching girls with impact to get to this new place. You run into teen investor Jack Rosenthal. It's like seeing your past experiences in a different way.
It is. And it's fun. I'm like, cool. Jack, we have to connect.
Yeah, definitely connect on LinkedIn.
And Babson, I mean, you know, yeah.
No, pretty ironic.
Longer conversation about Babson, actually. I'm talking to one of the alums. He's on the board about doing some really cool things. So it's really cool to meet you.
Yeah,
well, I went to Bentley. I'm a double Falcon, so I would have booked Jack if I'd known. Right? Sorry,
Jack. You're in Greenwich, right?
Yes.
I'm in Armonk.
I know. Get your family
around the corner.
over here, man.
It's so funny. We're meeting online, but yeah, we're right next to each other.
Always the way the world works.
I know.
We've come to a different spot in the show.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
I don't really know whether or not we've made Carl person of the day, so I'm going to make it Carl Weaver.
Nice.
I feel like at this point, everyone's been person of the day maybe once, but you know,
Coach Woodard has been person of the day so much. He's like, please don't anymore. And I keep saying we'll send him a smoking jacket, like, because, you know, 5-time winner or something.
Yeah. Cody, by the way, says it's a real good thing that he bought all those X-Men and Invincible comics then.
You know it.
Comic books are getting investment boosts right now because there's a lot of people who don't want to put their money into other places, and they're trying things like art, and you know, they're considering a comic.
Yeah, I mean, everything's becoming an asset now. I mean, next thing you know, like that chair behind me is going to be worth something just because such heavy inflation is causing everything of value. Every like asset is now becoming worth so much more. Say sports cards, whatever it is, like all these old antiques that people perceive have value now all of a sudden have huge amounts of value relative to the dollar.
It never makes any sense.
$250,000 Pokemon card yesterday with an autograph on it. So we're at this part of the show where we've asked.
Yes, Carl.
Yes, you can, Carl.
LinkedIn profile.
I'll endorse it. We've reached that part of the show where we ask every single guest that we've ever had on the same question. Everybody from Sir Mix-a-Lot to Sister Ann Flanagan to Jesse Hooker Bailey from Broadway. We've asked the question, what goes in your backpack? And this could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. It should be something briefish. And Carrie, what's a great example of a physical thing you could stick in a backpack?
Extra set of teeth.
An extra set
DJ
of teeth.
DJ Cumberbund. It will forever be my favorite.
It's going to be hard to push that one out of the running.
Yes.
Hey, what's a good metaphorical thing we could stick into a backpack?
Kindness.
I got one. That's
well, we got it. Jennifer Opichel, what do you got?
Well, I was going to say niceness. You know, it's not always nice, but when you do it, A, you feel good, and B, it's so much better to build relationships by being nice. People like nice people, and you succeed by building those relationships.
It's true. They respond differently to you when you approach them with kindness. They respond to you differently than if you come at it with more like a shrewd business type exterior, more like Jack. No, I'm just kidding.
Jack, what do we do? What do we do to add to that backpack right now, Jack?
Well, I mean, I already know mine's extremely corny. You guys are going to hate me for saying this, but I'd say my book because I can't come up with it.
That's it. You're kicking him out.
I mean, you guys have, what are you guys doing? Like mental kind of things? I mean, I'd say.
So physical or metaphorical, just
whatever,
like either,
you want.
Yeah.
You know, written determination. You could say my phone, you know.
I mean, my phone's pretty useful if you're in the middle of nowhere. I don't know. I'd say, you know, a good investing book. I mean, I just sound so
surprised you didn't say a whole lot of money in untraceable bills. Tens and twenties.
Great ideas. I can't pick one, but I don't know. I like the. Why don't we go with cryptocurrency, since that's the theme of the show. A little
cryptocurrency. You don't even need a backpack.
Yeah, you just put it in your pocket.
You need to remember your wallet number.
Oh, okay. That's right. Dave says, yes, be nice and lull them into a false sense of security. That's not untrue when you're a lawyer. That's a lot.
Oh, my gosh. Don't say things like that. All right. Listen.
Stick with your book, Jack, says Deanna. Don't let Chris bully you out of keeping
your book. I am totally bullying you. Listen, I'm looking for a sponsorship from Massengill. Anybody? No.
Wait, where's that yellow card at?
I don't have a yellow card.
I got to get some new ones, but.
There are.
Boom shakalaka! Yellow card, Brogan. And Brogan is going down like a bag of hammers tonight.
Yeah.
So.
We couldn't go a whole show without one.
I had to do one yellow card. All right, listen. One thing that my grandmother taught me earlier about investment is don't invest in potato chips, it turns out, because...